You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Rommel, a credentialed NBA writer who has covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanEat.com. Cover the NBA at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRommel13.
We're going to open up the mailbag again today. We did a mailbag last Friday, but we got some stragglers, some straggling questions. So we're going to get to that a little bit later and talk about tonight's game between the Miami Heat and the Houston Rockets. But David, first, we have to talk about that Hornets win. Unbelievable. Saturday night, on the second night of a back-to-back, shorthanded the Heat were without Goran Dragic, without Tyler Johnson, without Deion, without a bunch of players. And they have a lead for so much of that game, and then they blow it. Right? It wasn't a 16-point lead at some point when they blow it.
It was.
And it looked like that was going to be a loss. And in the last 30 seconds, down by five, they come back miraculously. James Johnson hits a layup, bringing it within three. Josh Richardson steals the inbound pass to Nick Batum. So Nick Batum has it in his hands, and Josh Richardson is like, no, that's mine now. Grabs it from him, and then has the mindset to kick it out back to James Johnson, who was feeling good about himself after a bunch of bad offensive games, feeling good about himself after hitting that layup to bring it within three. Richardson kicks it out to him about 5 feet behind him. James Johnson nails the three-pointer from his sweet spot, and then boom, tie game. Then, of course, the Hornets get it back. They bring it down the court, and the Heat get a much-needed stop. Kelly Olynyk gets the rebound, initially looks to get it to a guard, but he can't. But credit Charlotte for their guards getting on in their transition defense, because they attach themselves to Miami's guards. Olynyk's like, well, there's only about 5 seconds left. I got to take this baby down the court. So he starts dribbling down the court. Dwight Howard touches him, maybe pushes him a little bit harder than he should have.
Okay.
Olynyk falls over, right? And I'm not accusing anybody of anything. Olynyk falls over, draws the foul, misses the first free throw.
Yeah.
The game's tied at 105. Misses the first free throw. At this point, I think everybody is on the edge of their seats. I'm standing up. My dog is nervous. I could tell. And then he, of course, hits the second free throw. With 0.2 seconds left, Charlotte can't do anything with it. Heat win somehow, some way. What a game.
It was a tremendous comeback. Look, it was one of those weird games where, even according to ESPN's metrics, it was supposed to have been what they call a schedule loss. Like, this was something that where they were going to come in because of the short turnaround from the night before against Brooklyn. They were supposed to go in there and lose. Not to mention the fact that they woke up that morning and were without Goran Dragic, who had played the night before against the Brooklyn Nets, but he was out against Charlotte. So that was a particularly big loss for them. Obviously, Tyler was going to be out anyway, but for Miami to go in there already depleted as far as their roster is concerned, to even suffer an additional blow with a loss like Dragic, that was a hard one to swallow. And somehow they managed to turn around. As far as the Olynyk thing is concerned, look, he did get fouled. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if people are complaining that it was a little bit oversold. I agree with that too, though. Like, I don't know that it was necessarily a flop, but, you know, Olynyk really, really sold the hell out of the contact. Now, Howard made contact. He went across the arm first, and then he kind of put his hand on his hip and gave him a little shove, maybe.
Extended the arm there. Yeah. As soon as he extended that arm, they're calling that foul.
Yeah, and you know, there's momentum there. I could see that maybe in my – I don't know. It looked like Olynyk fell completely, like he lost all control of his legs there. I don't think it was that hard a foul, but he was trying to get the contact. He was trying to make sure that he sold it and had them, you know, make the right call, and they did. So it worked out. But
also, two things also on that. Olynyk had Dwight Howard beat.
He did.
So Dwight Howard, like, in a way, made the right play.
Oh, prevented the easy basket by fouling instead. Yeah, make him earn it at the line, et cetera.
Like, it wasn't it would have been better had he not gotten beat.
Yeah.
But also, Kelly Olynyk is much faster than Dwight. That's never been Dwight's game, to beat a guy in transition. Maybe, like, I shouldn't have said never. Maybe when he was in Orlando, when he was at his peak athleticism, he could have done that. Yeah. But in this old rickety Dwight Howard now, he's going to get beat by Kelly Olynyk, who he've lauded as a ball handling center for all season in his entire career, basically. So he made the right play, sort of. Yeah. If it was an intentional foul, it was the right basketball play in that moment. So.
The irony of Dwight Howard hacking Olynyk at the end there, that's pretty interesting. But you know, even going back further to the stunning performance from James Johnson, I mean, at one point with 5 minutes left in the game, Miami was actually down 9, 87 to 96, and then they managed to close out the game on a 19 to 9 run. That's incredible. I mean, aside from that 5 points in 3 seconds or however many it took, that was a really, really impressive comeback. Now, maybe you shouldn't have gone to that point because you said they did have a 16-point lead. But, you know, they were tired. They were shorthanded. You know, a lot of different reasons. You know, again, to echo what Eric Reed was saying during the broadcast, no excuses. You know, the team doesn't really believe in them. They don't follow them. But a lot of reasons why they might be falling apart there. And yet somehow they stuck with it. You know, there were a lot of impressive things there. Richardson played some really good defense, came up with some nice baskets. Olynyk in particular had a really, really strong fourth quarter. He was looking really, really good. And Johnson bounced back after, you, as you pointed out, a number of bad offensive games. And he started off really aggressive. He kind of really seemed to be energized and realized that a lot of the onus was going to fall on him to try and put up a big game. And he certainly did that early on and again later on. Like, this was the first game, I think he had gone 3 straight games without scoring in the first half. And he was actually able to get off the schneid against the Hornets. So that was pretty interesting there. But
I thought Spoelstra at the end in that fourth quarter did a much better job coaching. I frankly think, and you know, it's hard to take much away from Spoelstra because he's got his teams in these games despite all these injuries. Obviously, Waiters is out for the year. He's getting a couple guys back, but Dragic, Tyler Johnson not being there, not having a bunch of guys against Brooklyn. I thought he was outcoached for those 7 quarters between those 4 quarters against the Nets and the first 3 quarters against the Hornets. I thought he was pretty much outcoached. But that fourth quarter, I think he got it. Like, there was no reason for Whiteside to be in that game as long as he was. And he didn't play in the fourth quarter. And it's not anything against Whiteside. It's just, it's a little bit against Whiteside. But it's more like what the Hornets were doing with that pick and roll. They were attacking Whiteside every single time in that pick and roll. I mean, Spoelstra before the game said he was expecting 80 pick and rolls that game. So he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And he left Whiteside in there for a long time. And, you know, it's hard to discredit him if the Heat were up 16 points and he's still getting beat on pick and rolls. Big deal, they're up 16 points. But that's slowly where they were slowly able to get back into that game because of that set. And against Brooklyn at the end of that game, and the reason they were able to steal that game was because Spoelstra, I thought, left Whiteside in there just way too long, and he ultimately took him out at the end. But he probably left him in there for 2 or 3 minutes too long, and that was the game. That kind of decided the game there. And Whiteside has been really struggling in that pick and roll coverage against those faster guards like D'Angelo Russell and Kemba Walker and especially Spencer Dinwiddie and guys like that who kind of just torched him in that set. So good for Spoelstra. Look, again, I'm not trying to say he's been outcoached or anything. I thought he didn't do as good as a coaching job. Mm-hmm. It's hard to take credit away from him because, again, he had his team in the game despite all the injuries. You got to give him credit for that. But I thought there were certain things there. And in the fourth quarter against the Hornets, he coached the hell out of that team. So full credit to Spoelstra too in that comeback.
He even went with Adebayo late in the game, you know, getting a little hometown love being back in North Carolina there playing in front of his mom. That was nice to see. And he gets the win most importantly. So, I mean, look, Charlotte played a heck of a game too, you know, with Steve Clifford coming back, got a huge performance from Batum, even though he coughed up the ball. I mean, I can't even fault him for quote unquote turning over the ball against Richardson, because Richardson just went in there and snatched his lunch, man.
I tweeted this after. That is a star play. I'm not saying anything about Josh Richardson other than that is a play a NBA superstar makes, right? It's those little things that sets guys apart, and that's a little thing that he does. I mean, you think about the superstars of this league that kind of rise to the occasion in the most important times, and that's, I mean, granted, it's just a game in January, but That's a huge play. You know what I mean? Like
He recognized, first of all, that the inbound was developing quickly. They got the, for whatever reason, there was enough time in the clock, and they had just, Miami had just scored off of the Johnson layup at first, or was it a dunk? It was a dunk. Johnson dunks it. They inbound the ball right away, even though like half of Miami's roster was already down court there. And so I don't know why. Kemba Walker, I believe, was the one who inbounded the ball, and he kind of just threw it directly into Batum, who was, you know, right there. And Richardson recognized that the play was unfolding quickly, saw that Batum didn't have enough time to adjust after catching the inbounds pass. And it seemed like he was like playing like cornerback. He was right there as the pass got into the receiver's hands. And next thing you know, he's out wrestling him for it. And he just rips it right out of Batum's grasp. Really, really interesting. And then to have the recognition again, to go to Johnson right away, who was flaring out to the wing. That was impressive. He just kicked it right to him. And no hesitation in his shot. One of the things that we talked about for earlier in the season in particular, when he looked like he was struggling with his three-pointer, didn't seem to have any problem just rising up, shooting it, and nailed it. And that was it was just beautiful. I mean, look, they still needed a couple defensive stops. They needed Charlotte to miss a couple of easy opportunities there. And they, of course, needed that free throw from Olynyk. But to close the gap so quickly, a really, really good one. Charlotte, unfortunately, just one of those teams that has struggled with tight losses. Mm-hmm. For everything that Miami's done well in closed games, Charlotte's been the exact opposite. I think somebody tweeted out that like they haven't won a game by 3 points or less like in 2 years or something like that.
Kemba Walker can't do it all, and he has to, and he just can't. Nobody should be expected to do that. So we'll get to your mailbag questions next. But first, if you run a company and you're unhappy with your ROI with traditional advertising online or in print, try something new in 2018 and advertise with us here on Locked On Heat. National brands like SeatGeek, Draft, and MyBookie are already advertising on the show, but it's also a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers than from traditional media, and the number of people listening to podcasts is growing every year. Can't say that about newspapers and listening to radio. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable, and they're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and money. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. All right, so tonight's game against the Rockets will be the first nationally televised game for the Heat this season. But we're going to preview the game. We're going to preview that game next, but let's open up the mailbag really quick here. Billy writes in, using the post Big Three Celtics as a comparison, I think Miami needs to get past that fourth seed in order to get a disgruntled star to say, I want to go to Miami because I could be the guy to push them over the top. Very similar to Kyrie being traded to Boston. Do you agree that this team needs to get that top three or four seed in the East to become attractive enough for players to force a trade to Miami? This is a really interesting question, David. And look, right now the Heat are a half game back behind the Cavs for that third seed, right? They're probably not getting the first or second seed. But a top three seed I think is doable considering how badly the Cavaliers are struggling right now and how bad their defense is. Miami, you know, Cleveland seems to kind of get worse and Miami kind of tends to get better. I think a third seed is completely in the realm, very much in the realm of possibility for this Heat team. I think the difference of having the three seed and the four seed is pretty big in this regard to Billy's question, because if you're that third seed, you're above, I mean, you're taking the spot of a Boston, Toronto, or Cleveland, right? Like, you're taking one of those top three spots because everybody knows those are the top three teams in the East right now. So if the regular season you can do that, I think that speaks volumes. If you look at where the Heat came from last year with that 30-11 finish and barely making the playoff or barely missing the playoffs, I should say, and still kind of getting that attraction from guys like Gordon Hayward and other free agents, kind of like tilting their heads and being like, hey, what's going on over there in Miami? Because they're doing a lot of stuff there. And you could kind of build on that. You could build on that by going from ninth place in the Eastern Conference to third within a season with basically the same team. That is huge. And I think a lot of teams would. I think the Boston comparison by Billy here is pretty good because they were without an all-star. I mean, you could talk. They had Isaiah Thomas last year. He was an all-star. But even before that, they were in the playoffs. They were getting attention. They were able to get Al Horford. That was huge for them because they were able to be competitive in the Eastern Conference despite lacking that all-star. So if Miami could do that, I think it would be enormous. And I think that would really get them sort of on the path to at least get a guy to say, look, trade me to the Heat. I want to go there. Because you look at the NBA in general, we could talk about how cap-strapped the Heat are and stuff like that. But, I mean, Chris Paul forced his way to Houston. There's ways to get it done when the star says, make me go there. Yeah. There seems to be ways to make it happen. I think it would be huge if the Heat could get that three.
I don't know, to be honest with you. I mean, I think it's great for them to do so if they have any hope of making it out of an early round. But at the same time, I'm not sure that it makes that much of a difference for players at this point, just because, one, Miami was always an attractive destination for free agents anyway, or even guys trying to force a team. I mean, we've seen this for years since Alonzo Mourning did it in 95 to Shaq in 2006 and so forth. I think Miami's just always been that kind of franchise. The loss of Dwayne Wade probably hurt Miami's chances in free agency more than anything else. But I think last year we started to see signs that, you know, Miami was establishing itself even further as a premier destination just because of the culture being more important than anything else. And as overwrought as that message has become, and you know, how saturated we've become with just hearing about culture and culture and culture, I think there is definitely some appeal from a player's perspective, being able to go to a stable franchise. Particularly, look, if you're like a Boogie Cousins who had spent his whole career in Sacramento and the dysfunction that is so rife throughout that whole organization, of course a place like Miami is going to be enticing because there's much more stability. You know exactly what's going to happen on a daily basis. It's none of the dysfunction that other franchises have had for so long.
I mean, all that stuff is really nice, but it's like, and they've always been an attractive free agent destination, but Kevin Durant didn't come to Miami. Gordon Hayward didn't come to Miami. LaMarcus Aldridge didn't come. Like, these guys didn't because they weren't winning. Like, they were, like, it's okay, fine. They could get some in the
Kyrie
room, but
wanted
to
come here. I mean, Kyrie said Miami was one of the teams he wanted to come here. I just think Miami didn't have a trade package interesting enough to lure him in here for Cleveland's perspective.
Sure. Yeah, they didn't have the Brooklyn pick. And that's a good point because Kyrie didn't even want to go to Boston because he didn't think it was even possible. Right. He didn't think – mostly because he didn't think Cleveland would deal with Boston because he thought it was insane, and he was right. That was an insane thing for them to do. But I think it does make a difference only because it gets them – they're already in the door, right? But they haven't lately been able to get guys, and they're already, if they're already in the door, like who wants to really go to Houston other than because they're winning? Like, it just, they don't have Dwayne Wade. They don't have,
but
like, what
that kind of supports my
selling
argument,
the
then.
Culture and the structure.
That supports,
no, I think we're arguing the same thing, I think, but having that third seed, I think, makes a much bigger difference than I think you're getting a credit for, because if they're already winning, that makes it so a superstar can come and be like, I can take them over the top. I think that's a really good argument to make. Otherwise, as before, it was just like we're kind of selling them on what we could do for them as opposed to what they could do for us. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
We're arguing the same thing. I really do think. I just think having that little extra notch on their belt would help them. Like, kind of maybe seal the deal with one of these guys.
Yeah. It's just, you know, the other side of the equation then is also, I mean, just because a superstar might – stipulate that they want to come to Miami, they yeah. don't have that kind of control. They can't dictate what teams they get traded to. So I'm not quite sure that anybody could force a franchise's hand and say, you know what, trade me to Miami. And given what Miami has to exchange for any disgruntled superstar, I'm not sure that they have a viable option ahead of them, though. But that leads us to –
that's a good point. Yeah,
go ahead.
I mean – The one way that Miami could get ahead of this, right, is that Boston's probably not looking to make a move. They're not going to look to get another superstar, right? They're going to try to incorporate Gordon Hayward back, and they've kind of got what they're doing. I mean, maybe they might make – I shouldn't say that. They might make a move for like an Anthony Davis or something, or try to, but
no.
I don't think that the Heat and the Celtics –
Celtics fans don't want it because Terry Rozier is untouchable in trade talks for Anthony Davis.
But, like, who else is really making a move in the East of that – of that kind of quality player? So if there's a player in the Western Conference, now teams, we see this all the time. They don't, if they're going to trade a superstar, they like to do it to a different conference. We see it all the time. Indiana trading Paul George to Oklahoma City for basically nothing. I mean, it ended up turning out into Victor Oladipo, but they didn't know that. And I don't care if they say they did know that. We like to see that. So is there somebody in the West? I mean, we've heard rumors that maybe Portland is looking to break up their backcourt of CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard.
No,
if you're Portland,
they're reportedly interested in acquiring DeAndre Jordan. That's one of the names that they've been linked to. Actually, I think a report came out today, did it not?
Yeah, and then you look at San Antonio. What's happening with that report this morning? Mm. Where Kawhi is maybe a little unhappy with the Spurs organization. Now, I don't want to read too much into that, but like hypothetically, if Kawhi just said, "I want to get traded," the Spurs don't want to trade him anywhere into the Western Conference. They're going to look to send him east, right? So if that's the case, I don't know. Maybe Miami gets into the discussion here. Is it more worth it for a team in the West to say, okay, yeah, maybe we can get a little bit more from this other team in the West, but then we're going to lose to this guy every year in the playoffs. Maybe we just take a little less, send him east, and we don't have to play him hardly ever, right? And we don't have to, and certainly not in the playoffs unless we meet in the finals. So I don't know. I'm just kind of more spitballing than anything here, but I do think having one of those top three seeds helps. Now, I don't know if you want to talk about that Kawhi thing at all, because it's kind of juicy.
It is an interesting proposition. I mean, does he change the perception of Miami then? Is Kawhi the kind of free agent that or a player that you think other players want to play with?
Yes.
I don't get that vibe at all, to be honest with you. Yeah, really? I don't. I think actually, from what I gathered last year when I was talking to a bunch of players about the MVP race and everything else, and if you remember, and obviously it went to Russell Westbrook in the midst of his historic season, and Harden was considered, LeBron is always a factor there. Kawhi was the one name that nobody mentioned as far as who they thought should win the MVP. And talking to more guys about it, the feeling I got was they resent him and his sudden success. The fact that he's, you know, a finals MVP, that he's already won a title, that he's already within the MVP conversation after just a couple of seasons in the league, he hasn't done, and what a lot of people think, enough to warrant being in the top four or five players in the league. And that sticks in their craw a little bit, and they kind of resent him. So, I mean, they even regurgitate some of the things that your more myopic fans will say publicly, like that he's just a system player.
Exactly. Yeah. I think these players are a little influenced by what the media
absolutely
does. Absolutely. More so than they like to admit. And the media didn't give Kawhi any credit for that MVP race. It was all Harden and Westbrook last year. That was all anybody talked about. LeBron made a late push just because he's LeBron. Nobody talked about Kawhi because of the seasons, historic seasons, Russ and Harden were having. So I think maybe that, I don't know. I wasn't there for your conversation, obviously, but maybe that kind of factors into why he wasn't talked about. But look, he tries hard defensively, which is something players want to play with. Players want to, like, Kawhi is picking up the best guy on the other end, like, period, end of story. That, if you're another superstar player and you know, I don't have to deal with that, Kawhi's got that responsibility, I think that's good. He passes the ball well. He could score from everywhere. I don't know. But look, if the Heat have a chance to get Kawhi, you just do it. I don't care. You factor in all that other stuff. If players like him or not later on, I think you just do it because he's obviously a franchise changing player. Well, let's talk about what to expect in tonight's game against the Rockets. But first, before we get to that, quick reminder to make sure that you're subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. And guess what? We are now on Spotify. Yes, you can listen to us on Spotify now. We're very excited about that. Also, make sure to leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other Heat fans discover the show. For example, Ras Madyard recently left a review, says, I love this show. When it's not on, I feel lost due to the fact that there are no other shows out there that have this type of knowledge and passion about the ultimate subject in my life, other than my children, the Miami Heat. Keep up the good work. I love that. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. They got you ready for the Super Bowl coming up in a couple weeks. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay, Heat versus Rockets, like I said, first nationally televised game if you include NBA TV, if you count that as nationally televised, which I sort of, like, I think it's like half nationally televised because I feel like not many people have that as ABC or ESPN or TNT. But anyway, it's on NBA TV tonight. They're playing the Rockets. Big game. Heat will be without Goran Dragic or Tyler Johnson again, so we should expect Wayne Ellington, Derrick Jones Jr. to get the start again, just like in that Charlotte win. This is a really big test for the Heat. I mean, luckily they're coming off a good momentum win, right? They're coming off a big win, and they're not on the. They have some rest now, having Sunday to rest. So, look, the Heat have played well against big time opponents this season.
2-0 against the Rockets last season, especially before and after their big streak. Houston was a part of one of the factors I think that kind of swayed Miami there. And obviously they had Deion to come up with some huge games, but they did go 2-0 against the Rockets last year, worth pointing out. Now, I think they had some injuries there, and I want to say Harden missed one of those games. I'm not sure if I remember that correctly or not. But, there were some factors there. I just don't know. I'm kind of – it's
Harden and Chris Paul will be available for this
game. Yeah, it's – look. And there's also the fact that if you want to include, you know, the Clint Capella being in there – that when the three of them play together, I think their record is 17-0, if I'm not mistaken. So when all three of them have been on the floor this season for Houston, they are 17-0. They're undefeated. All three of them will be there against Miami tonight. So that should be interesting. Look, the issue is Josh Richardson having to cover – Josh Richardson has to cover James Harden, right? I mean, which means – who guard Wayne Ellington on Chris Paul? That's
– No, I think they put Derrick Jones Jr. on Paul. And they've been putting Derrick Jones Jr. like they had DJ cover Kemba a little bit. I think they go DJ and Josh on that backcourt. Or, I mean, this would be the game. Look, this is the game to start Winslow, right? I think you and I, they haven't announced that Ellington and
yes,
DJ are
the,
starting.
The theory, right? Exactly.
So what if you start Winslow at quote unquote point guard? Like you and he's played backup point guard for the last two games with Dragic.
It's from Houston. That would be a huge game, I think. I think it's something that Spoelstra has to be aware of. Like, I trust enough in Eric that I think he understands when it's time to insert a certain player in there and give them a boost. And you're not going to get much. If you don't make that early impression defensively, in particular early on, you're not going to have a chance to bring them off the bench and have them be a factor. So throw him in there. Throw him in there as a starter. You're not going to throw him in there for points. You need his defense over Derrick Jones' occasional hops or whatever it is that he might provide there. So why not put him in there, have him shut down or try to limit Chris Paul as effectively as possible? I think that's a great matchup there. It's a really good point on your part, to be honest with you.
Winslow could play a really big game. And I love that wrinkle that you mentioned, that he's from Houston. I hadn't thought about that. That is such a good point because he's going to be jazzed up for this. I mean, I already see him on Instagram and stuff like that. He's like taking the heat around Houston, showing up his favorite breakfast spots and stuff like that. So he's going to be a big part of this because if you play him in that backcourt and let him guard Harden or Paul, which he can do, I mean, this is the time to really lean into that advantage that the Heat have, which is basically that Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow are elite perimeter defenders. So go get those guys out there, and maybe they guard Houston's backcourt. But later on in the game, when Houston decides to go small with P.J. Tucker at center, which they will do, what does Miami do to counter that? Do they stay big? Do they go Kelly Olynyk, which is what I think they're going to do, is Kelly Olynyk at the five because that's what their small ball approach is. Even though he's 7 feet tall, they believe in his perimeter skills. Or do they go even smaller with James Johnson or Justice Winslow at the five against P.J. Tucker, against P.J. Tucker's strength? I mean, that might be a move that they have to do. I'm also interested. They probably start James Johnson at the four, right?
Oh, that's a great matchup. That's a great matchup for Johnson. I think he can – look, if he can hold his own the way he did against Giannis Antetokounmpo, I think he can do a good job of limiting Ryan's shots. Like, I mean, he's going to shoot from 26 feet out, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
But I think James can kind of throw elbows in there and make things very, very difficult. So he's going to have to go out onto the perimeter just in any hope of making those shots. And I think even though Ryan Anderson is so tall, I think Johnson can block any shots, maybe steal the ball from him and kind of force the fast break a little bit. So I'd be curious to see how that matchup goes. The small forward one, Ellington on Luke Mbabute. That could be an interesting matchup there. I think Ellington can hold his own against. Yeah. Say it again. I can't pronounce that last name.
Mbabute.
I don't know why I can't. I know I just did it then.
I have practiced that one. I have, because I love it. It just sounds so African. It's like sounds like a tasty dish. Like Mbamute, I'll have that. And a nice Malbec, please. I think, you know, he's gotten better as a 3-point shooter, Mbamute has, and he's learning to sort of do those straight line attacks off the dribble when people close out hard on him. I think Ellington's fine. So those are some of the interesting matchups. I think two guys that have to have big games for the Heat to win this have to. Hassan Whiteside, like that is one. If he could be dominant Whiteside, that is one advantage that Houston cannot match up with. I know Clint Capella is very good, but and by the way, listeners, go read David's piece on Clint Capella. Came out for the Step Back last week. Awesome piece on Clint Capella. Whiteside needs to have a big game against Capella as far as protecting the rim against Capella's straight line drives when he's on that roll. I mean, you talked in that piece about how efficient he is. Whiteside has to stand up against him, and then offensively, Whiteside needs to get some points in the paint to sort of maybe slow down the Rockets a little bit, kind of keep that time up or those possessions down for Houston. And then of course, defensively, the Heat have got to run those guys off the 3-point line. And to do that, Whiteside's going to have a big game in the paint.
You know, I'm not optimistic about that one. Cause to see,
it's a tall pass,
how Whiteside was victimized in the pick and roll against, you know, the Nets and Spencer Dinwiddie, Harden Capella pick and rolls are going to destroy him. Like, I don't want that to be the case. I'm hoping Whiteside.
Eric Gordon.
I mean, there's no
Eric Gordon, by the way, He just plows into people. Like, he's going to – I think Eric Gordon's due for a big game if he's going –
He's struggled lately. Yeah, he didn't play particularly well against the Warriors, despite the fact that Houston still pulled away with a victory. So
he's good. He's the crap out of me. Because he'll put his shoulder – that dude's big, and he's bigger than people give him credit for, and he'll put his shoulder right into those rim protectors. Yeah, maybe Bam Adebayo has a
That would be a good one. I think he can actually hold his own. He's got the speed for it, which is interesting. I like that matchup against Capella. Capella's not huge either. Whiteside's taller than him, but he's explosive. He's really, really quick. And you know, there's like a split second there between where you see that screen coming and he's already rolling. And you get a guy like Harden, who's as good as he is, as strong as he is. And that's the thing that a lot of people give him credit for, is how strong he is. He's either going to create contact, which, you know, a lot of people will criticize for being, you know, flop worthy or whatever, but he's drawing a lot of contact, or he's going to find Capella for a perfectly timed lob. And Chris Paul was able to do the same thing when Harden was out with a hamstring injury. So I don't know. Yeah.
That's another reason why Richardson and Winslow might be a good option to start there, is because they could sort of reroute Harden and Paul a little bit and just kind of knock them off their spots. And that's huge, because that Houston offense is so much about rhythm and flow. If you can just sort of knock them off their routes a little bit. The Whiteside's the first guy, but maybe Bam. I don't know. Second guy, Wayne Ellington. Because if Miami's going to win this game, they've got to match their three-point shooting. The Rockets lead the league, obviously, in three-point attempts a game at 43. They lead by a mile. Just for kind of a reference, the Heat are seventh, which is up there. We know the Heat shoot a ton of three-pointers, right? They're seventh, and they shoot 31 three-pointers a game. Again, the Rockets are shooting 12 more threes a game. They are leading the league in three-point attempts by a mile. They make about 3 to 4 more threes a game than Miami does. If the Heat are going to even be in this game, Wayne Ellington has to have a huge night, because he's kind of the only guy that can sort of get out there and kind of play horse.
Yeah, I mean, it can be exploited defensively. I think they're as good as Houston's been, or improved as they've been defensively. They're not the kind of offensive juggernaut, not just the offensive juggernaut a lot of people assume that they are. But at the same time, I think they can be exploited. I think a guy like Wellington, damn, there it goes. Beef Wellington coming around screens.
Beef.
You know, if he can tire Mbah Mute a little bit and have him, you know, create that kind of space there, I think he can have a big game, and he'll need to be honest with you. So it's going to be an interesting one.
And the big physical guys like James Johnson, Whiteside, Winslow, Josh Richardson, even to a degree, you'll see Josh go into the post every once in a while. Even though there's probably not he's not going to do that against Chris Paul or even James Harden.
Can I make a lukewarm take here? It's either going to be a Heat victory or a total Heat blowout loss. Like if it's close, I think Houston has enough firepower to just blow it open there, and I don't think it'll be that close. Either if it's close, it's because Miami's defense has found a way to limit either Harden or Gordon or Paul. And if that's the case, then or Capella even. So they got a lot of weapons there. So it's close.
I like that take, actually, because it's rooted in a lot of logic there, right? So. If it's close, Miami has shown the opportunity and the ability to win close games. What are they, 20-7 in clutch situations? Something like that in clutch situations. So, hey, they've shown the ability to do it. And if it's not that close, then they're going to lose because Houston's blown off the doors of them. Yeah, who knows? That three-point shooting for both teams could be streaky, but more so for the Heat than the Rockets. So it'll be a lot of fun, and it'll be a chance for everybody to sort of watch the Heat, so they better kind of step up. I mean, not everybody, because not everybody gets NBA TV. I kind of disagree with calling this a national televised game. What do you think about that? Should we count that?
No, it's
not. It's like half. That's like half a nationally televised game. I find giving it like half a point. So if you have two NBA TV games a season, you have one nationally televised game.
I think, you know, in the interest of riveting, you know, radio conversation here, my cable provider does not offer NBA TV unless I pay for it. I have to get the special sports pack.
And so they spell pack
PAK in order to make it interesting, I guess. I don't know, millennials. They took out that consonant. They took out that extra consonant. I don't know why. In any case, yeah, you got to pay extra just so they could include like the 18th ESPN channel and NBA TV. So I don't know. I don't know if a lot of people will get it. If you're going to go to a sports bar, there's a Heat Road Rally in Midtown Miami. I think that's a great option for all our listeners heading out there. So have a drink and say hello to the Heat dancers for us, and have a good time.
We'll be back tomorrow with our recap of tonight's game. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps tonight. Tweet us at Locked On Heat using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Don't forget to find us on Spotify, newly on Spotify. You can listen to us on the go on your Spotify app. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.